Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to start the second episode. We haven't really completed it, but we've completed it for now. The first episode, which was our introduction to Yaakov and Esav, their birth, the conception, because we're introduced to the story even before they're conceived with the difficulty that Yitzchak and Rivka had in their prayers, their conception, their birth, their growing up, and then the buying of the rights of the firstborn. That was the first episode that the Torah described, and we are now going to get to the second episode. The second episode, because of its length, we're just going to read it beginning, instead of giving you sheets, we're going to be reading it out of the Chumash, but we're only going to be working on the text. None of the notes on the bottom. We're going to get to that. Hang off on that. We're just going to be reading the
Mitzvah.
They are easier to read, I know. Now, we're going to start. It's on page 132 and 133. This is just in the same parsha as to what we started. Just to give you a sense, if this means anything to you, if you flip back to page 128, you will see the top three verses on page 128 and 129 are our story of episode 1. So this is really then the beginning of chapter 26. If you read the headers on the side of the page of the art scroll, is the famine forces Yitzchak to the Plishtim lands, and Yitzchak is in the land of Gerar. They have a argument over a bunch of wells, and he makes a peace treaty with Avimelech. That's the only thing that takes place in between our first episode and then Yitzchak's death, because the second episode that we're about to start this morning is Yitzchak is about to die. This is indeed the last episode that Yitzchak himself will take place in the giving of the blessings, because once he gives the blessings, he's out of the picture. So this is his last episode. His life, he prays in the beginning of the parasha, he conceives, has twins, the boys grow up, we know a little bit about his life in this chapter in between. He goes to Plishtim, there's a dispute about the wells, he has a peace treaty, Hashem makes a promise to him, and now we get to the stage in which he gets old and wants to bestow the blessings. So this is where we then start our second episode. I am also going to begin, as I've mentioned many times in this class, who gave us the chapter numbers and verse numbers?
It wasn't Jewish.
Correct. It was not Jewish. It was Christian. When the printing press came into existence, one of the very first books that was printed was indeed the Bible, but it was not the Jews printing the Chumash. It was the Christians printing their version of the Bible. And so they, for various reasons, placed whatever they decided to place new chapter headings, or wherever they did it. The paragraph breaks that you'll see, for example, on the bottom of page 132, where we're going to start, you'll see on the Hebrew side, towards the bottom of the page, there are two spaces. Those exist in the actual Sefer Torah itself, and that is part of our Mesorah, it's part of the tradition, and that does tell us where there should be various breaks. So our episode, we're not going to begin with chapter 27, although that does have a chapter break. We're going to start with the paragraph, the two verses before that, and that's going to introduce us to our second episode, which we're now going to spend a significant amount of time on, which is the episode of the blessings being given to Yaakov and to Esau. Everybody with me so far? Now, again, today, probably not even just today, maybe next Tuesday as well, we're just going to go through the verses. This is a story that we're all on some level familiar with. Yitzchak gets old. Let's just talk out. This is what we know. This is the brush strokes of the story. Yitzchak gets old. He wants to give a bracha to
Esav.
To Esav, to his eldest son. And he tells Esav to do what?
Go out and get meat.
Go out to the field, hunt me an animal, and prepare me the meals the way that I like them. Esav exits stage left. Overhearing this conversation in the background is
Rebecca.
Rivka. Says to her son Yaakov, this is what I just heard, get me from the flock animals, I'm going to slaughter them and prepare them. Yaakov is all afraid, he's going to be caught. She says, I'll cover your arms with the skin, and he doesn't want to do it. She pushes him into it. Yaakov comes in, has a brief dialogue with Yitzchak, who is a bit confused as to who is the child standing in front of him, and he eventually gives him the bracha. Yaakov exits stage left. Esav comes back in, and Yitzchak realizes that he's been duped. Esav is all upset about it. Yaakov gives him, Yitzchak does have one bracha left for him. And then the story concludes that Rivka again overhears or understands that Esav is pretty angry enough to kill, and suggests to Yaakov and to Yitzchak, why don't we send Yaakov away to my brother Alav? And that's the end of the episode. Those are the brushstrokes that you're all familiar with. So far, yeah, basically that's nothing new, right? What I'm pretty confident about is as we go through this story and actually read it, verse by verse and phrase by phrase, there will be so many nuances in this story that you will be not only surprised at but amazed at the depth of the story. As even before we get to Rashi and the Ramban and refers just the Chumash, this is a story which, this is one parsha. Parsha's told us we just spent, you know, 9-10 weeks on the first, you know, third of the story. This is going to be the back third. So there's just, in the course of a Shabbos, we read through the whole thing. Maybe you heard a sermon on it, one aspect of it or not, but we're actually not going to study through and be able to compare and contrast all the different conversations which take place. And you'll see this is really quite a significant story. So let's begin. Let's begin with the end again of chapter 26. We're not going to start from chapter 26. And the end of chapter 26, verse 34, Pasuk Lamed Daled. Again, we're just reading Psukim, raising questions. If you have a question, I'd love to hear it. We'll put them all on the table, and then hopefully we'll get back to and answer them. Vahi Esav ben Arba'im Shana. And Esav was 40 years old. Vayikach Isha es Yehudis bas Be'eri Achiti. And he took as a wife Judith, Yehudis, the daughter of Be'eri the Chitite. And Basmas, the daughter of Elon, ves Basmas bas Elon Achiti. So he takes for himself how many wives? 2. What's significant about his age? How old is he?
40.
Who else got married at 40? That's right, excellent. In the beginning of the first episode, you remember very well, the first episode, the Torah introduces us to the fact that Yitzchak and Rivka are married, and they're barren for 20 years, and how old is he when the twins are born? 60, so we know that they got married at 40. And lo and behold, Esav, who, again, at this point, we don't, they were the same until they were 13. The last thing that we knew was that he had come back from the field, and according to Rashi, told us from the sages, he'd already begun to veer off the straight and narrow path. Esav, at the age of 40, decides to do the same thing that his father Yitzchak had done at the age of 40, which was to get married. Now he marries two women. He marries Be'eri the Chittite and Basmas also the Chittite. Vatihiena Moras Ruach li Yitzchak uLerivka, and they were a source of. Now Moras Ruach is an interesting word. We have here the disadvantage of using the Chumash as opposed to my own sheet that we're going to go with, which is generally Rashi's translation. They were a source of spiritual rebellion to Isaac and to Rivka. Now, however we're going to understand Moras Ruach, it's a negative phrase. They were a source of displeasure, discomfort, some form of spiritual rebellion to Yitzchak and to Rivka. Now, the reason why we're going back to this pasuk as we begin episode 2 is because this is very important. How many people were these wives a source of displeasure to?
Two.
Two. Both to Rivka and also to Yitzchak. So as we go along in the story, and we're about to read the story of Yitzchak desiring to give his son Esav a bracha, and we're going to have to ask ourselves the elephant in the room question, which is, did Yitzchak really intend to give Esav the, capital T, bracha? Did he really believe that Esav was the righteous one? What did he or didn't he know? Going back to episode 1, when we spoke about who receives the prophecy about the elder and the younger and might passing from one to the other, Rivka receives that prophecy. We don't know if Yitzchak ever hears of it or not. We still haven't received total clarity in that. But when Esav gets married, the women whom he marries are a source of discomfort to both Yitzchak and to Rivka. So Yitzchak is at least aware of the fact that he's not marrying well. That much we know. Okay, so far so good? We'll leave that on the table. We will get back to that. Okay, here we go. Here's our story. This is the bulk of the story. Chapter 27. Vayihi ki zokan, zoken Yitzchak. And it came to pass when Yitzchak had become old, vatichyena einav meraos, and his eyes dimmed from seeing. Vayikro es Esav bino agadol, he called Esav, his older son. Vayom reilav bini, and he said to him, my son. Vayom reilav hineini, and he said to him, here I am. Okay, questions, comments.
That's a very favorite reply.
Okay, excellent. So let's just start with that. Now, the word hineini, when we saw that in our, when we studied at length, which story was it most prominent in, and remember?
Garden.
We, no, we didn't have it there.
God.
Where was hineini very prominent?
What is the name?
Hineini, here I am.
Okay.
Akedas Yitzchak, the binding of Isaac, was very prominent. Anyone remember how many times that phrase came up there? It was three times. When when Hashem first calls to Avraham, where we don't know what he's going to say, he just says, Avraham. He says, Hineini, I'm here, I'm ready for you. When Yitzchak, on the walk up the mountain, sees that, well, we got all of these materials here for a slaughtering, except we're missing the animal, and he says, Abba, Avi, and Avraham responded there to Yitzchak, he said, Hineini. And then when the angel calls out to Avraham, as Avraham is about to carry out the act that he's been preparing for, Avraham responds to the angel and says, Hineini. So we have a Hineini to God, I'm ready to do whatever you want, a Hineini to his son Yitzchak, I'm here for you, and a Hineini to the angel saying to him to stop to do what he was setting out to do. So it is an appropriate response. It is an exalted response, but we have here Yitzchak calling out to his son Esav, and we have that same response of Hineini, which is again, I'm here, I'm ready for you, what is it that you want? Now we will see that Esav excelled in one mitzvah, Kibud Av V'Em. The sages extol Esav for the ability to honor his mother and his father, and certainly this response fits with that. His father called him, and he gives the same response that Avram gives to God, the same response that Avram gives, Hineini, I'm here, whatever that you want, I'm ready for. Excellent. What else do we have in this verse that's of interest? Do you have a chumash?
Mm-hmm.
We're on page
132,
134.
Thank you. Well,
that
you could not see well.
Okay, what about that? Okay, you're already giving a midrashic explanation. We're working on the text. As you're reading a story, what question, is there a phrase, is it necessary, is it unnecessary, is it helpful? As you were reading the story, came to pass, Isaac had become old, his eyes dimmed from seeing, that he summoned Esav. Do we need to know this now?
Mm-hmm.
Is it relevant?
Well, obviously it is. It's in the permission.
Okay, excellent. Okay, now that was one of those questions where I've asked before, like, you know, I could ask a question about the nature of God, and like, well, it was like, I don't know, the answer is of course not. Right? Of course it's relevant, because the Torah tells us. Okay, so let's rephrase that question. Okay, why do we need to know that? Now, obviously, on the most basic level, we can say, well, because the Torah is foreshadowing that what's going to happen in this story is that Yaakov is going to try to sneak in and pretend that he's Esav, and that wouldn't work unless his father couldn't see. So on the most basic level, we could say the reason why this detail is here is because it's going to be a necessary component for the story to be able to play itself out, that Yitzchak is indeed blind and can't see who's standing in front of him, otherwise this whole thing would never work. But let's leave it on the table as an interesting place right in the beginning of the story to tell us this element, this detail, that not only has Yitzchak become old, why do we think it's relevant that he's become old? Why is that relevant?
Because something's going to happen in his old day.
Well, we're going to see. He's getting ready to die. And he wants to bestow the blessings before he dies. The birthright, meaning that that's already been sold, is going to come into play.
Right.
And meaning he's going to die, and therefore we also need to know who's going to inherit the estate, so to speak, and the rights of the estate and the leadership, because he's getting old, about to die, and he wants to bestow his blessings. Okay, now let's just go through again. So what does he do? So, Vayikra es Esav Vino, he calls or summons Esav, his elder son, Vayomer Elav, and says to him, Bini, my son, Vayomer Elav, Hineni. Is anything interesting of that dialogue?
It's the reverse of the one you talked about earlier.
Excellent. This is a very strange way to introduce... I want to give a bracha to my son Esav, so I summon him. Now, I don't know what that summons looks like, but the Torah says, Vayikra es Esav bino hagadol. He called or summoned Esav, his elder son, Vayomri lov, and he said to him, what did he say to him? Bini, my son.
So is he suspicious? We're not up to that yet.
Good question. I don't know. We're asking questions. But let us parallel this, because I think it's very instructive. What did Yitzchak say, the same Yitzchak, to his father as they're walking up the mountain? He said, Avi, my father. And it was a sense, a question of, are you acting like my father? Because it looks like you're on your way to kill me. Avi, and Yitzchak Avram responds, Hineni, I'm here for you. And here we have a fascinating reverse of Vayomer Elav Bini, my son, and Esav responds, Hineni. Okay, very interesting, yeah? Okay, anything else? Okay, what we're going to be focused on a lot is which bracha did he intend to give to him? Like, what did he want? We'll get to that. Let's get the story down. So we have the opening, the calling to his son Esav. Now the Torah is also clear that the Torah defines him by Yikras Esav Bino Agadol, that he was calling to Esav, his elder son. Vayomer Elav Benini, says, my son. Vayomer Elav Hineni. Okay, onward. Vayomer Hineno Zakanti. Lo yodati yom mosi. And he says, now, in other words, there's like a two-part conversation. He says, Bini, he says, I'm here for you. And then Yitzchak responds again and he says, look, I'm getting old. I have aged. I do not know the day of my death. Don't know how much longer I'm going to be here. So he states explicitly to Esav, his son, why this is taking place, that I'm getting old and I don't know how much longer I will have in this world. The ata, so now, sonoche lecha, tel yecha v'kashtecha, take, sharpen, if you please, your gear, your sword, and your bow, v'tzei hasodeh v'tzudo li tzayid. Go out to the field and hunt game for me. Tzudo li tzayid. Take for me, we saw a similar double language. Ki tzayid b'fiv, that he was one who put game in his mouth. Esav to Yitzchak. So here Yitzchak says, go out and hunt for me a game. We're going to read one more verse because it's a three-verse speech, and then we'll break down the speech into its components. Va'aseli matamim ka'asher ahavti. Make for me delicacies as I love. Ve'hevi oliva ochela. Bring it to me that and I will eat it. Va'avor tevarechecha nafshi v'terem amus. So that I may bless you, so that my soul might bless you before I die. Okay, so after the opening, my son, I'm here for you. After that, the three-verse speech that Yitzchak gives to his son Esav. So let's go, let's break it down and see what comments that we have to say. The first verse is fairly straightforward. See, now I have aged. I don't know when I'm going to die. Meaning of that is fairly, I think, obvious and straightforward. Whatever it is that I want to do, I need to do now. The reason why I'm asking you to go through this process now is because I don't know how much longer I'll have. I need to get this done before I die. It seems to me, now is the time. That seems fairly straightforward why we have that introductory line. Any other comments? Are that agreed? Okay, verse 3 and verse 4. Let's take them one at a time. What's odd or interesting or of note in his speech? Sharpen, if you please, your gear, your sword, and your bow. Go out to the field and hunt game for me. What's of note in that?
So much detail. Your gear, your sword, your bow. You could have just said...
Very, very interesting, right? I'm refraining from using the word strange, but I really would like to use that word. It's hard for me to say that about Yitzchak's speech. Like, really? Esav is the master here, right? Everybody knows Esav is the man of the field. We've been calling him the man of the field since he was a young boy. He was at least 13 when we started calling him that. How old is he now?
40.
He's the expert.
Sharpen.
So Yitzchak says to him, sharpen, take your sword and your bow. Yeah.
I want to know what he's asking to hunt with a sword. A sword isn't a hunting
knife. Okay, excellent. Excellent. So I know you're picking up, Deborah's picking up the word kashtecha is a bow, but telyucha seems to be a sword. That is a rather, you know, what combination of sword and bow? If you're using a bow, right, you're using an arrow and you're shooting from a distance. If you have a sword, then it's much...
If he had said bow and snare or something like that, that would make more sense.
Okay. And what is kelecha? What's included in gear? In other words, if you noticed again, if you didn't have the art scroll here, we would have had a bunch of commas. He would say, sharpen up your gear, your sword, and your bow. So art scroll is putting dashes in to say that what he meant to say when he said, sharpen up your gear... I mean your sword and your bow. So we'll see where that comes from as far as those dashes as opposed to just putting in commas. So that art scroll, which is usually based on Rashi, is translating it as two items as opposed to three items. But we'll keep that as a question. But the main question is the detail. Totally agree with the way that you said that. Esav is the master. Yaakov, Yitzchak should have said to him, go out and prepare me some fresh meat. Okay, well, let's just move on. Let's get the whole speech here. What does he want him to do? Tzeah sadeh, go out to the field and hunt game for me. Then he says, and then make for me delicacies such that I love. Bring it to me so that I should eat. Ba'avor tivarechecha nafshi beterem amus, so that my soul can bless you before I die. Okay, comments?
Before.
Okay, let's go back to your comment,
which was this is the second time we see food being exchanged for something spiritual. It's like he's setting up maybe like a kinyan where things need to be exchanged.
Okay, we certainly have some type of exchange here of Esav providing the food, Yitzchak providing the spiritual blessings. Somewhat different, but it's somewhat analogous to the food sale of the birthright of our previous episode, in which there Esav was the one providing the rights of the birthright in order to be getting food. Here Esav is giving food in order to be getting something, so it's a little bit reversed. We can ask a more basic question. You're asking the second tier question. The most basic question on Yitzchak's speech, which you're probably not thinking of because you've heard it so many times, which is a much more basic question, which would be,
why does he have to eat?
Excellent, right? There's at the core of this whole story, the elephant in the room question is, what? Really? Yitzchak, we're talking about Yitzchak Avinu, would like to bestow a blessing upon his son Esav. So instead of telling him, come, let's learn a piece of Gemara together, let's daven mincha together, he says, go out and hunt me something fresh and prepare it just the way I love it. Ka'asher ahavti. And then, what will be able to bless you? Note?
My soul.
Excellent, right? Look at the conscious as we go back and forth. Hunt me something fresh. Prepare it just the way I love it. So that what? So that my soul might be able to bless you. That's going to be a theme. We're going to leave that on the table now. We're not going to answer because we're going to see this the whole way through this story. Because at the center of this whole story is food, the preparing of food, the way that it tastes, in order to be able to bless. And so this is really going to be one of the... At the end of the day, we're going to find a very deep concept in all of Torah, this idea that Yitzchak is teaching us of, for my soul to bless, the body needs to be fed. And it's a fascinating combination, and we're going to get to it, because if you think about Yom Kippur, we would say that's not the way it works. In order for my soul to soar on Yom Kippur, I need to remove my body from the equation. so that my soul can soar. But we find that not on Shabbos, which we do have the food combo, and certainly here, in order for Yitzchak to be able to bless, and as Dina pointed out, the language is specifically Tivarechacha Nafshi. My soul needs to bless you, so make me food just the way I like it. That's going to be the big elephant in the room. We're going to talk about this consistently because it appears everywhere. Question? Yeah.
Not really a question, just a comment. We also have the eat and be satisfied before saying a bracha.
Excellent. V'achalto, v'sovato, uveirachta. Eat,
not just eat.
Be satisfied, and then you will bless and thank Hashem. So here we have something similar of eat in order to bless, but not to thank Hashem, but in order to bestow a blessing upon Esav. So here's our opening speech. Really, so there are two components to the speech. First, we have the Bini Hineni. My son, here I am. And then Yitzchak gives him the three-verse speech of, I'm getting old, we need to take care of this, go prepare all of your utensils, your bow, your sword, go out to the field, hunt me some fresh game, prepare it just the way I like it, in order that my soul be able to bless you. So that Yitzchak, as we finish with this first component of the episode, the first speech to Esav, is up front with what the goal is. The goal is for me to be able to bless you. That is what I want to do. The Torah has told us he's old, he can't see. And I want to now remind you of the first verse that we studied. We also know, how does Yitzchak feel about his daughters-in-law?
Doesn't
like him. So we know that whatever is going on in his head, that he now wants to give this blessing to his eldest son, Esav, we at least know as a fact that he's not in favor of the two daughters-in-law that Esav had chosen for himself. So far, so good? Okay, let's continue. V'rivka shoma'as, Pasuk Hey, verse 5. V'rivka shoma'as b'daber Yitzchak el Esav b'no. Rivka heard, or was listening, as Yitzchak spoke to Esav, his son. Vayelech Esav hasadeh latsur tzayir lehavi. And Esav went to the field to hunt the game, which he would then bring. Comments, questions?
Esav, his son.
Yes. Excellent, right? Right, whose son is Esav?
Both Rivka.
Both of their sons. She carried him. She can't get away from the fact that she's his son. So yet, the Torah, in narrating the story, tells us that Rivka overheard Yitzchak talking to Esav, his son. What's the implication in your mind as we're just reading through this?
She knows he favored him.
Okay, on some level, as the Torah told us, that Yitzchak loved Esav, Rivka loved Yaakov. We know that she knows the prophecy that there's going to be might passing from one to the other, and that the elder will eventually serve the younger. So she's clearly on the side of a Yaakov. And so here we see little hints at that, in that the Torah calls Esav his son, but not necessarily her son. We'll leave that on the table. An interesting comment. Anything else? Well, how are we supposed to translate the phrase "Verivka shoma'as bedaber Yitzchak"? That she just happened to, is this, did this story come about because, I don't want to use the word coincidence, but I will just for the argument's sake of the class. What, did it just happen that she was walking by as Esav is called in to her husband Yitzchak, and she happened to have heard this and therefore said, this is terrible, and then the whole mechanisms are put into place, but it all came down to a fortuitous episode in which she just was walking by the tent as he was speaking, or
she was,
correct, she was, she's on the lookout. She sees something in her family that her husband doesn't, or that they certainly haven't spoken about. She's concerned. She sees her husband is old. She sees her husband can't see. Now, if you can't see, there are lots of ramifications of not being able to see. What else can't you see besides for the fact that you can't see who's standing in front of you?
Can't see who's standing in the corner.
Correct. You have no idea what's going on. Which means that she might be acutely much more aware of the behaviors of her sons than her husband is, who can't see. Maybe, yes?
She's also very old and possibly dying, and she's not going to be out of the room.
Okay, so all I'm saying is, how do we translate this phrase? Was it a matter of this Verivka Shoma'as? She was, maybe, in other words, you're suggesting maybe she was there. Yitzchak wasn't hiding anything. It was, she's in the room, this is her husband, she's taking care of him, he calls in his son Esav, and in front of Rivka tells him the whole story. So that there's none of that evil connotation. It wasn't a fortuitous walking by. It wasn't a sneaky eavesdropping, waiting to hear when this is going to happen. She was shoma, she was listening, because she was right there. So the Torah uses the language of Rivka shoma'as bedaber Yitzchak el Esav bino. Rivka was shoma'as. She was listening, or she heard. We have to really see how to translate. You see, the art school translates it obviously as what's in front of you as was listening. That language implies she was waiting for this. She was listening for this, not that she overheard. It doesn't use the language. Let's just contrast this for a moment. I don't have the exact page. Let's see if we can find it quickly. If you remember the first time that Avraham is approached by the three angels in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, page 78. And the three angels, or page 80, they come to visit. And they come and they say, on the top page 80, they say, you're going to have a son to Sarah in verse 10. I will surely return, and behold, Sarah, your wife, will have a son. The Torah says, V'Sarah shoma'as Pesach ha'oel v'hu acharav. It also says that Sarah was listening, but where is she? At the entrance of the tent which was behind him. Here the Torah uses that same phrase of shoma'as, V'Rivka shoma'as, V'Sarah shoma'as. Except by Sarah, it tells us a little bit of more information. What else does it tell us? She was listening at the front of the tent, and it was behind him. So that Avraham does not know that she's there when he's speaking. By Rivka, it does not say that. It doesn't say the Rivka Shoma'as, and she was behind the entrance of the tent, and nobody knew that she was there. It just says that she was Shoma'as, as Yitzchak was talking to her son, or to his son, Esav. We'll leave that on the table. That's going to be a major point also to discuss how that comes about. Yes?
Well, since Rivka had gotten the prophecy, wasn't it sort of her responsibility to manipulate things?
Excellent question. That's a question which comes up a lot in the discussion of Yosef, who received the dreams. Was it the type of prophecy that Rivka heard, that it was her job to facilitate it? Or it was just, you're troubled by a difficult pregnancy, you want to know what's going on? I'll tell you what's going on. You have two nations in your womb. I don't have an answer for that question right now. Leave it on the table. How much of an active role, and if we say that she was eavesdropping, or that she was manipulating the events here, is that correct? Is that what it means to hold a prophecy that said, you received this prophecy, that is no longer just information, it's a mission, so to speak, an obligation to create the circumstances that will allow for that.
What do you
mean? Answers? I don't do answers.
You don't do any questions today.
I'm really good at questions. Answers are a totally different story. Yeah.
Hard to ask good questions.
Yeah. Well, it's really hard to answer good questions. So we'll leave it on the table for now.
We don't want to think badly of her.
Well, correct.
So by, you know, rationalizing why she was doing it because of the prophecy, we don't think badly.
Certainly becomes certainly an approach. Let's leave questions on the table. Let's study what the commentators, you know, have to say, and then we'll see what we can come up with. That is an excellent point. Okay. So again, verse 8. So Rivka is listening as Yitzchak is speaking to his son Esav, and then the Torah tells us that Esav left. Vayelech Esav hasoda lo tzutzayid lo havi. He went out. So now we assume that that's what was going to happen because that's what he was asked to do. Now the Torah explicitly tells us indeed that he left to go get the game. Rivka amra el Yaakov bina lemor, and Rivka said to her son Yaakov, saying, Hine shomati es avicha medaber el Esav achicha lemor. She says to her son Yaakov, behold, I have heard your father speaking to your brother Esav, saying, as follows. Let's just put a break on this for a second. What's of note in her speech to Yaakov? Anything? One comment I'll make.
Well, Rebecca, her son.
Excellent. That's what I was saying, right? We had Yitzchak was speaking to his son Esav. And now when Rivka begins to speak to Yaakov, the Torah in narrating the story to us tells us she's speaking to her son. Interesting. Again, we go back to, obviously, Yitzchak loved his son Esav, Rivka loved her son Yaakov, and we see that theme being played out here continuously. And now she repeats to Yaakov, she's going to tell him the story that she just witnessed. Hinei shamati esavicha medaber leisav achicha lemor. I have just heard your father speaking to your brother, saying, it's interesting that you're, like, your father speaking to your brother. But she doesn't refer to Esav as my other son. It's your brother. I heard your father, who's also my husband, is speaking to your brother Esav, saying as follows. Okay, let's continue with her speech. So what does she say? So he says, she's going to report to Yaakov what she heard Yitzchak, her husband, saying to Esav. And how does that go? Verse 7, Pasuk Zion. Hevio li tzayid va'aseli matamim ve'ochela. Bring me some game and make me delicacies to eat. Now what we're going to do is, I'm going to foreshadow my plan, we're going to compare and contrast how Rivka reports the conversation against how the conversation actually went. All right, so I'll give you all a few minutes to take a look at the two things, and then we'll come up with all the things that we have to say. But let's read it together first. Havili tzayid va'aseli matamim va'ochela. Bring me some game and make me delicacies to eat. Va'avarechecha lifnei Hashem lifnei Mosi, and I will bless you in the presence of Hashem before my death. End of her summary of she's going to continue with her speech, but at the end of her reporting of what Yitzchak had said. Now there are a number of significant differences in what she says. First of all, she says it in a half a verse, in one verse, and Yitzchak said it in three. So let's pick up on, well, what did she leave out? What did she add? How did it go from three down to one? Because she does not repeat word for word what the Torah told us a couple verses earlier. It's a little different conversation. So everyone see the difference? We're going to compare and contrast verses 2 through 4, which is Yitzchak's speech, through her summary of that in verse 7. Okay, what do you guys got for me? So, true that Yitzchak had said it as, in verse 2, I'm getting old, I don't know when I'm going to die. But at the end of verse 4, he says, I should bless you before I die. So that's fairly accurate.
Okay. And he left out what he told him to do.
Okay. She leaves out what we were very troubled by, which is Yitzchak's request of sharpen all of your utensils and your bow and your sword. She leaves that whole part out. Excellent. That's one. Now what else we got?
In the presence of Hashem.
Okay, what about that?
Well, he had said, my soul may bless you. And here it's, I will bless you in the presence of Hashem.
Okay, you're pointing out two things. Let's take them one at a time. Yeah. Let's just start with the first thing that you just said this last go around. How did Yitzchak himself phrase how the blessing or where the blessing is going to come from? But my soul will bless you. When she repeats that to Yaakov, what does she say? Just that I will bless you. Now, I don't know if we only would have had that phrase, that I will bless you, I would have said, that's normal. Yeah, of course, I will bless you. It only becomes interesting to me that Yitzchak himself said that my soul should bless you, and she drops that. She just says, so that I will bless you. Interesting. Now, you said a second point, which was?
I will bless you in the presence of Hashem.
She adds something to Yitzchak's words. Yitzchak just said, make me some good food so that my soul should bless you before I die. And what does Rivka add? Lefnei Hashem.
But isn't that similar to soul?
The soul was Yitzchak about himself, let my soul bless you, which she drops.
Yeah.
And then she adds,
in the presence
of Hashem. Interesting.
It's always going to be in the presence.
It's certainly always going to be there. And why did she feel the need to add that if he didn't? One more major difference that no one has gotten yet. To me, I think it's a major difference.
Talks about the thing that is his favorite.
Excellent. Thank you. How did Yitzchak define the meat that he wanted in his original speech?
Which you know I love.
Excellent. Which to me was just a strange thing for Yitzchak to say. Meaning, Yitzchak Avinu. Okay, on the table again, we're going to have this major discussion of why does he want food. Okay, he wants food. But that Yitzchak should stress, make me the food the way I love it. Was to me, I noted that when Yitzchak makes that speech, so that when she then says to Yaakov and says, your dad asked Esav to make him food, what does she leave out? And he didn't say, the way I love it. He just said...
Well, she did call it delicacies, at least in the English translation.
Okay, well, they're both delicacies. In other words, Yitzchak's words were, make me delicacies the way I love them. And she says, he asked him to make him delicacies. So she drops the phrase, the way I love him. She adds the phrase, before Hashem. She drops the phrase, let my soul bless him. Okay, I think that's it. So far, what do we get? Three big ones? Okay, what do we make of those? We'll have to see. What are we going to make of the fact, if anything, that, again, let's just summarize again, she drops the fact that he said the way I love him, she drops the fact that Yitzchak said, I want my soul to bless you, and she adds that the blessing should be before Hashem. Oh, and she also drops the sharpening, that's the fourth one we had, all the specific request of the sharpening of all of the stuff. Okay, so far so good. Let's do a little bit more. V'ato b'ni shema b'koli. Now, my son, listen to my voice. La'asher ani mitzavo osach, to that which I am about to command you. So she has an introduction to her next part of her speech when she tells Yitzchak, or Yaakov, I should say, listen to what I'm about to say to you. Lech Noel Hatzon, go now to the flock. Vekachli Mishom Shnei Gidayei Izim Tovim, and take from me from there two good young goats. Ve'ese Oso Matamim Lo Avicha Ka'asher Ohev, and I will make of them delicacies for your father as he loves. Comments, questions?
I keep wondering why two.
Excellent. Hmm? Why is that a question?
Surely from one goat there would be enough.
Excellent, right? In other words, how many people are we feeding here?
One.
At best, Esav was supposed to eat with him. Maybe he wanted to dine together. There is no way that in a young goat you don't have enough meat to serve two people. So why does she need two? Excellent question. Okay, what else?
Here she includes the delicacies that your father loves.
Excellent. What do you think is the implication that when she says to Yaakov that your dad just asked for meat, and then she says in her command to him, go bring me a goat, I'm going to make it the way he loves.
What are we supposed to think?
Yeah.
Know that that is a fact.
What if you're Yaakov and you're listening to this, what do you think that he's, what message is he getting when she says to him what Yitzchak said to Esav, he didn't mention the way that I love it, and when she says go bring to me, I'm going to make it the way he loves it. And I like have a thought about this. I'm just curious if any of you are picking up on it also.
Yaakov wouldn't have known, so she's giving him the information that she has, that he asked, that Isaac asked for.
But, right, and in his world, Yaakov doesn't know that Yitzchak specifically asked for that, so that when she says, I'm going to make him his favorite dish, it's more reassuring to him, I would think, that that, like, on his own, he's going to be bringing him that, like, he'd be worried about that. And she's like, I know the way that he likes it. Don't worry about it. I'm going to prepare it just the way he likes. I haven't fully formulated that right, which I think that somehow this is going to play into the way that she's communicating it to him to allow him to be able to take on this task, which is not going to be an easy task for him to take on. But let's leave it more as a question for now then. Yeah?
He doesn't even know yet that she's going to ask him to go in and bring it. All she said is,
correct. Right. I'm going to make it the way that that he likes it. Let's read one more verse. Let's finish up her speech, and we'll call it a day. Dad, veheveisu avicha ze'ochal. You'll bring it to your father, and he will eat. Ba'avur asher yivarechecha lifnei moso, in order that he should be able to bless you before his death. Comments, questions? Okay. Straightforward. That's her commands. Let's just summarize what we have here. She has a three-verse speech to her sons, really four verses, I should say. The first of her speech is what she says. She repeats what Yitzhak had asked of her son, of his son Esav. Go bring me some delicacies, that I should bless you in the presence of Hashem before my death. Then she has a three-verse speech to her son saying, listen to what I'm about to command you. So that he knows that this is something big coming up. She's going to command him in something, and she's saying, you must listen to me. Go to the flock, fetch me the two goats. I will make them the delicacies that your father as he loves. You will bring it to him, and he shall eat, so that he may bless you before his death. She doesn't say it, but means, and instead of Esav. So this entire plan is explicitly conceived of by Rivka. She's the one who heard the original conversation. We haven't yet discovered how it was that she heard it, but she hears it. She takes matters into her own hands. She tells her son Yaakov to go to the flock and take the goats. She's going to prepare it. She makes slight nuanced differences in the way that she speaks from the way that Yitzchak himself spoke, and basically commands Yaakov to go in, feed his father, and that he should be the one to be blessed. So far, so good? Lots of questions? We will continue, God willing, with the rest of then Yaakov's response, and then her response, and then we have to get to, now just like we did in the first episode, we broke up the episode into its different components. We're going to have to break up this episode also. We're going to have to break it up into the plan. That'll be part one, and then we'll have to break it up into what actually happens as it's carried out. Okay, have a great week. We'll meet you up next week, Mirtz Hashem, next Tuesday. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.